from the BizTalk Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here is your host, the guy that believes anyone can be a successful entrepreneur, because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio. Thank you so much for being with us this beautiful last weekend of January. I hope it's beautiful wherever you are. The weather certainly has been horrible recently, making it easier to stay inside and work hard on your business, right? So School for Startups Radio, we're devoted to two things. Number one, getting you off the sofa, motivating you to go out and start, try something. And number two, we're going to give you the skills, the tips, the tricks, the techniques to be successful when you do that. We're going to change the way you think about entrepreneurship. So this is really important. When I said get off the sofa, you immediately said one of three excuses. I know, because I've had this conversation 1,000 times. One of three excuses immediately came out. And you said, number one, oh, I can't take the risk right now. I can't afford it. It's just too risky. And our response to that is always the same. We're not going to spend a bunch of money to start this business. We're going to spend less than $5,000, as a matter of fact. And we're going to show you how to do that. And that is one of the cool things that we will give you in the tips, the tricks, the techniques section of the show. It's some great bootstrap strategies. Now, people will come to me and say, well, you can't start a great business for under $5,000. Well, I'm sorry. So many of the Fortune 500 companies were, so many great companies were started for under $5,000. And I have had so many guests who have done it themselves. I've done it. So don't tell me it can't be done. It's going to change your strategies, but we're going to teach you that. So not only are we going to change your view of risk, but we're also going to change your view of creativity. So another reason you're sitting on the sofa and saying, and these, you know, your excuses, these ideas that you justify your inertia with. The second thing you're probably saying is, if I get my idea, I get my great idea. And you have the creativity excuse. I haven't had the great idea yet, but when I do, oh boy, am I going to jump hard and go off and start the coolest business ever. And that is also just completely ridiculous, right? 93% of businesses are copies of existing businesses. So if you don't have an idea, go find an idea and do it better. Very simple. Go find an idea and do it better than the people who are currently doing it. See how simple that is? Read a magazine, find someone in Dubuque and do what they're doing in Denver. And there you go. And so that, you know, the whole creativity thing is BS too. It's just an excuse to allow you to not start yet. And then number three, finally, this passion thing. So people are going to come to me and say, but passion is so important. I have to love it. And I will argue, yeah, so what? I love my lifestyle. I love being an entrepreneur. I love selling stuff and growing businesses, but I don't really care what the stuff is, right? I love all of the stuff that comes with it, the lifestyle, and that is what is worth living for as an entrepreneur. It's better than having a job for the man. It's just living the lifestyle. And so when you say you have to be passionate, I say, I am passionate. Well, first I'm, you know, passionate about my family and church and the things I'm supposed to be passionate about, my country, right? My neighborhood, my friends, my family. But I'm not really passionate about my job. I like it a lot. I like it, but I'd rather be on vacation, wouldn't you? And if that's true, then you're probably saner, more smart than someone who says, no, I am totally 100% passionate about my work. And I say, well, then you got your priorities all screwed up there, mister. If that's the most important thing, if that's where your passion lies, then, you know, maybe you should do a reality check, right? I would propose that being really, 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 really fond of what you do is enough. Be passionate about the lifestyle. Be passionate about the fact that you get to go to soccer practice and see your kid play soccer, and then you get to go to ballet and see your daughter do ballet, and then you go home and have dinner and put the kids to bed, and then you work all night because you have the freedom and the opportunity to do that. Anyway, we've got a great show for you today. We're going to talk about franchises, and we're also going to talk about how to get into a big box store, in this particular case, Sephora, the cosmetic store. So we've got a great show and appreciate you being with us. You know, we haven't talked about franchises in a while, so I thought it was time that we did that. I'm very excited to introduce you to my next guest. Her name is Christy Wilson Delk. Now, it's a great story. Listen to this. In 1997, she sold her house, cashed out her 401k, and borrowed over $1 million, which is against all of my advice, right? So she didn't do anything that I would have told her. However, she turned that into one of the largest, most successful early childhood development centers in the country. And in 2012, she sold it for $14 trillion, I heard. Maybe a little, that's what I heard. That's the rumor on the street. Anyway, she is now out there helping and doing workshops for franchises and helping multiple unit business managers use her methods of success. She is the chief strategy officer for a company called Skyview HD, which is a drone company, which sounds pretty cool, and also is an adjunct professor at Rollins College, which is someplace, I didn't tell her this, that I also used to teach. She's the author of a new book called Adventures in Franchise Ownership, Four Pillars to Strengthen, Protect, and Grow Your Business. It's 5-star rated on that Amazon website. You may have heard of it. Christy, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hello, Jim. I'm doing really well. Thanks so much for having me today.
It is our pleasure. I love franchises because it comes with a manual. You know, it's a start. You're an entrepreneur, but it comes with a manual, right? So seems to me like a great step up. What are your thoughts on franchise ownership, the whole business model?
So, yeah, it's a great question to start off with. So I first disclaimer, I am not here to sell franchises. That is not what I do. But I am a proponent of the industry because I do think it's a great, I didn't say great S, but it's a great path to business ownership for expediency and for, yes, for success, but also, for the ease of getting into a business. Doesn't mean that you or it will be successful, but it's a quick path to business ownership. But yes, you do have to pay for that privilege.
So I don't like risk, and I think investing a bunch of money sounds risky to me. So what steps did you do to reduce your risk when you started and became a franchise owner? How did you satisfy yourself that, you know, investing $500,000, $1 million was a wise idea? What were the steps you went through?
Yeah, so the number was actually $1.67 million. And
wow!
You know, a whole bunch of money. Number one, I was my younger self, so.
I like that answer.
It was a little bit more palatable. And I do understand your point, and I read it on your website about, you don't have to have a bunch of capital to start a business. And that is true. However, for some to get in, especially when that requires an asset like a building an actual
a facility. Yeah, your facility costs a lot of money. Facility. So that's a hard one.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a hard one, is right. It's not for everybody, but that risk, you know, with air quotes, that risk that you're using and putting aside that much money to do this, then also comes with a bigger reward. Because when you do exit, and I don't know how you feel about exit plans, but I recommend you have one, and maybe not right in your hip pocket, but some idea. But when you do exit, when you have that kind of asset, then you can exit bigger, you know, and the reward is higher. So as a business model, I like it. I did a lot of research. I did a ton of numbers, and I spent a lot of early morning hours playing with my calculator and figuring out, okay, what is that number going to be down at the bottom right-hand corner? And what's it going to be year two? You know, what's it going to be year three through year five? And I think my calculations were pretty, I knew that they were my numbers. I didn't copy anybody's homework. So I knew they were doable. And I knew them, you know, like, you know, your children's birthdays. Well, hopefully, you know, your children's birthdays.
I have reminders for that. Thank you very much, Christy. So thank you for embarrassing me publicly.
I knew you had a few. So
a few, a litter, you know, a few.
Oh, that's good.
Yes, you we know, have a few.
You know, so, you know, you do know those numbers when they are yours. So the answer is, it sounds cliche, but I hate to say it, but it was a ton of homework, and I believed in the numbers. I didn't just say, I need some venture capital, I need a partner. I knew exactly what it was going to take, and then I knew that I could do it by myself. But I also knew it was going to be a ton of hard work for a long time, but I was willing to do it because of the time that I was in, you know, in my life. So
we will be right back in just a second to hear more of the story. And coming up later in the show, we're going to be talking about how to get into Sephora to sell your product. We will be right back. Welcome back to School for Startups Radio again. Thank you so much for being with us. So we're talking about franchises. And again, I just love the idea of a franchise. It's a first business usually that comes with a manual, a big book on how to run it and how to do it successfully from people who have done it successfully. And usually these books, these three ring binders, cover absolutely everything, HR and marketing and finance and repaying your startup capital and all of that. So it's just one of the absolute greatest ways, especially for a lot of corporate people who like rules, to come into the world of entrepreneurship. And I'm so excited to be learning from Christy Delk about this and to find out more about if this is the right idea for you. One of the things that I just love is that most franchises are not in the food space. That we think of franchises, we think of the big national food chains, but there are so many more and so many other great types and in great verticals. But anyway, let's get back to Christy. So Christy, what does it take to be a great franchisee? And let me ask you this. If you are, can we assume that therefore you're going to be a more profitable one, or is there necessarily that link? At a great franchise, I would assume that that link is true. What are your thoughts?
So you as a franchisee, most brands require that you submit annual financials. And so, of course, part of that is, you know, the top line and then the bottom line. What did you actually net? So top performing franchisees, when they are recognized, nobody's ever asked me that question before. I love it. They are recognized for their revenue. They're not recognized per se for their profits. So you could be at the top of the tier for the brand segment and maybe not make as much money as somebody in the middle. So depending on the efficiencies and pillar three is about money metrics, how you grow your business. And chapter 11, I say specifically control expenses and add efficiencies, which makes this book sound really dry, which I promise you it's not. But that is a big part of it. Having expense controls and adding efficiencies, not just worrying about revenue. So you can definitely make a lot of money depending on the segment, but this is probably a good time to add this. Some of your smaller brands, I don't mean not well-known brands, but take, I don't know, a yogurt shop or a smoothie shop or something like that. You may need three to get to that $250,000 or $300,000 mark. Talking specific numbers now, aren't I? But with a sort of a big box like mine, my franchisor would probably strike me down if he heard me say that, big box. But you can easily get to that three or four number, six figures with your one unit. So
why is that number so magic? Is that when you can start pulling money out yourself or hire a manager so that you don't have to go to work, which is the goal of all franchisees and employees? Why is that number magic?
The three number?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Three. And then they also say five is another magic number. It's because you can gain scales. So if
all
I
right,
had
yeah.
three, I can hire a general manager. So in my Kids Are Kids, while I had technically one franchise, I expanded twice, which gets me a little bit into pillar two. Having a great relationship with my franchisor gave me some opportunities that I asked for that I probably wouldn't have been allowed to do otherwise. So one was to expand. So I had a second building, and the third was to expand and to do that in a retail space. So when I got to that third store, I guess is a fair word, I was able to hire a general manager. So a general manager that made, you know, a good income, you know, 50 plus. So I then could focus on more strategic aspects of the business, you know, that leadership stuff, which I can define a little better than that, but and have some time to, you know, think about things outside of the business. So I think that's why it's magic, scale of economy.
Again, we are speaking with Christy Wilson Delk, author of the new book, Adventures in Franchise Ownership, Four Pillars to Strengthen, Protect, and Grow Your Business. Christy, let's talk a little bit about the book. Congratulations. What are the four pillars? So help me out.
Sure. The four pillars, which interestingly, I teach business courses at Rollins College, line up very nicely, unbeknownst to me when I wrote it, with the four functions of what managers do that most business schools teach. So pillar number one is called layers of loyalty to strengthen your business. So we're talking about loyalty with your clients, of course, your employees, and showing them you care. We're talking about connecting with your community. And then last, if you are a franchise, this definitely applies to all entrepreneurs, doesn't have to be a franchise, but if you are a franchise, loyalty with your franchisor. So layers of loyalty. Pillar two, strategic leadership to protect your business. So I talk real specifically about you are just one person. You can't lead everybody, every year, everywhere. So you have to get highly focused on who are you leading this year and what exactly does that entail. So I talk about communication being the ultimate differentiator and what to do when bad things happen, because they can and will happen. Pillar three is money metrics to grow your business. And I can go into detail, but pillar four is method management, not a new phrase, but I use it in terms of a framework for focusing your business, what you do in a disciplined way, weekly, monthly, quarterly, annually. For example, there's a chapter called chapter 16, meetings aren't sexy, but accountability is. So I found that holding people accountable was a big challenge, and it's hard. And a lot of, certainly managers, but certainly too, a lot of business owners have difficulty with that, but it's really important. And then thriving through the peaks and the valleys, and how to smooth those out so that things are a little bit more even keeled and not, you know, no drama, less stress. That could be my personal mantra. But those are the four pillars, and they work not interchangeably, but in concert. So if you can sort of picture four pillars, like the Grecian pillars, building, 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 and you can change them, and you can omit a layer here and there, but you keep building that to, you know, grow your business, strengthen it, protect it. So, but they line up with, to finish it off, the four functions of management that are taught, that's taught in most business schools: planning, organizing, leading, and controlling. So I thought that was pretty cool when I started teaching that wow, kind of what I said, but in a little bit fancier way. Not me, the textbook.
Right. Great information. And I do love the way that it matches up with those course topics and the MBA stuff that we all have to teach. But we need to take a break. We will be right back in just a second with more from Christy Delk. We will be right back. What do you do when your franchise, the franchisor, is broken? And I'm thinking of particular a couple franchises here in the United States right now that are just flat out broken. And I'm sure if we were to name them, we would all agree that they've lost it, right? Used to be the greatest franchise on earth, the greatest educator on earth, the greatest first job on earth, and now it's just a disaster. And you chuckled, so I'm sure you know exactly who I'm talking about. What happened? What do you do? What are your thoughts?
Yeah. And right after they did a couple of really good things a few years back. So as a franchisee, one thing that is interesting in the field is that in the industry is that there's not one business model. So they do not one franchise business model. So in that case, I think most of those owners lease their buildings. I'm not 100% sure on that. So I believe you have less opportunity to,
appreciate your asset. You're not making money off the real estate.
That's what I wanted to say, but didn't. Yes, exactly. So whereas like a Chick-fil-A, you know, they have a turnkey model and they're very invested in the success and they want you to be successful because of the way that their business model is set up. You know, it's a little different. So just talking about what do you do, I can make some suggestions, but also going into it, you really need to look at the business model versus maybe others. You know, the plain Jane vanilla is you write a check weekly or monthly to your franchisor. That's a certain percent of your top line number, your revenue. That's the basic model. And maybe it's a 20-year agreement. That's probably the basic, maybe 15. But when you get into these other areas, you have perhaps less flexibility. So you, number one, always, you know, you have to have dug in really deep with loyalty with your clients. You know, even though we might think something is big as a fast food restaurant, they're still regulars and they probably don't care what the franchisee is going through. They just want that smile, that clean place to sit, obviously a clean floor and hot french fries. So they may not, you know, and as long as they are still coming and the employees are doing their job and know that you're not going to bail on them, you know, at least those critical things have been taken care of. And then I think just like when you get into a business or make any big decision in your life, you have to think about, okay, this is a business cycle. This is going to come around again. It may look a little different, but it's going to come around again. Do I want to be here when it does or not? What do I want to do to cushion that? And the last is that all of these bigger franchise systems have franchise advisory councils and different boards. So there are a lot of different ways they can talk. And I got to believe they have a voice. I mean, they're using it with the media right now. And I think that has an impact. I mean, that stuff matters to investors and others. So Domino's, if you may remember a few years ago, in fact, we do a case study on it in class. It's a social media case study. They had that awful situation with YouTube where a couple of employees did like really gross things with the food.
Uh-huh.
And immediately they were fired and the franchisee had words for the community, but the franchisor also came out and handled it well, where before long it was kind of a non-issue other than that it's a good case study. But then you see things like Chipotle and United Airlines, even with the chairman of United Airlines not handling when bad things happen very well, And it goes on and on and on. So the responsiveness of the franchisor is huge. However, the franchisee does have definitely a pretty loud megaphone also for the local market, you know, it, for good times and bad times. I was on the news, one of my not good stories, but I put the good, the bad, and the really tough stuff in this book, mine and other contributors to the book, was I had a situation where a child got on the wrong bus. It happened at the public school. However, the responsibility was mine. And the parent was not, I was not able to appease that parent in any way, shape, or form. And I say it's because it was a brand new parent and I hadn't developed a relationship. But nonetheless, I ended up on the local news. And do you know who was the most mad?
You know, I used to run a children's business, and I'm sitting here just reliving all of the nightmares that I had. So I feel for you. I don't know who was the most mad. You, the kid, the mom. I would guess the mom.
The local franchisees in the area, the other franchisees.
Ah, yeah, it reflected poorly on them. Yeah. Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Not the parents. And I didn't mean to put you on the spot there. I've never
that's
done
fine.
That. But
that's why we play.
But it wasn't the parents. Well, the parents of the child, yeah, they were not happy. But
wasn't it the school's fault?
Yep.
Okay.
But you can't say that.
That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Yeah,
yeah,
it doesn't matter.
But yeah. But what did I do? So
that's right. It's how you respond to it. Yep. I lost a kid one time, Christy, during an award ceremony. 2 seconds before the award ceremony, the kid, I trusted him, came up and asked to go to the bathroom. I sent him to the bathroom knowing that he would be there, you know, on fine. I trusted him to do that. He was an old enough kid to do that. The award ceremony started. The mother came in, couldn't find her kid, started freaking out. I saw that she started to freak out and I stopped the award ceremony. I can't wait to hear what you're giving me a grade on how I did. And I said, ma'am, I see that you're upset. I see that your child is not here. I know who your child is. I know where your child is. I just sent them to the bathroom, and I need one of the staff to immediately go check and see if that child is there. And then I continued, and like 2 minutes later, the staff member came back and said, the kid's not in the bathroom. And I said, stop. We stopped the ceremony again. I said, every staff member needs to leave and go find the kids. And the rest of you, I know you have a schedule. We're going to continue, but it's just going to be me. And, of course, no one left. I finished the ceremony and no one left. They all wanted to see what happened to the kid. And at this point, I started thinking, Christy, that kid is where I told that kid to go. I trust that kid to be there. And so I went into the bathroom myself, and he was hiding in one of the stalls with his feet up so that we couldn't see him. Because he didn't make it to the bathroom because he had an accident and was afraid to tell anybody. And I kicked the door stall in and found him in there crying. So give me a grade on that.
Definitely an A. You know, you got a 94, which that's the highest A you can get here at Rollins College. Yeah, so that's good. That's good.
Well, boy,
yeah. Well,
I mean, kids are hard.
Kids are really hard. And in this particular case, you know, the parents are hard. But in this particular case, the little boy, there's always a backstory. He had been dying, pining to ride the yellow bus, the Stingray bus.
In the
book, I call him the Stingray Boy. And so he snuck and got on that bus. Turns out the school really didn't, you know, shepherd him on there. He kind of snuck on. So, but your takeaway and my takeaway was, here's how we're going to do it different in the future. Anytime someone's not on a bus, we are calling parents. So answer the phone if it's ringing and it's us at 3:00.
Christy, we're out of time. How can people find out more, follow you online, hire you to come and lead a seminar at their place, or just buy the book?
Thank you. Really appreciate that. The book called Adventures in Franchise Ownership, that is a website that will point you to my website, where you can get more information for sure and some articles and other things. But you can also get a download of the intro and chapter one. But right now on Amazon, there's a Kindle promo because I knew I was doing this interview and a couple others for $1.99 on Amazon. So Barnes & Noble, Target.com, local bookstores, I hope. If not, you know, ask them to order it because I think local bookstores need a good business, motivational business section. And then Four Pillars Approach will point you to my website. So multiple ways. And I would love to hear from any of your listeners. I think you have a terrific show. And for anybody that, you know, is feeling a little bit frustrated, it's the beginning of the year, not sure what to do, whether it's this book or another book that speaks to you and on your business.
Christy, thank you so much for being with us. Great information, great story, and I hope you'll come back soon.
I appreciate it, Jim. Have a terrific year.
We'll be back in just a second. We're going to talk about how to get into a big box retailer. Welcome back to School for Startups Radio again. Thank you so much for being with us. I just love franchises. I hope you enjoyed that. I think it's a great idea for a starter business. But let's move on. Very excited to introduce you to my next guest. This is a really cool story, in particular for all of you fans of the beauty fashion industries. My next guest is named Aggie Burnett. She started her career at Glamour as a beauty assistant, and I don't think that's the highest job there, but she was able over time to start and build her career and has developed two fantastic companies now in the space. She started a company called Nomaterra Fragrances, which was able to get into Sephora just in the first 2 years. But after that, they decided to pull back and go to direct to consumer. We'll ask about that transition. The brand has been talked about in InStyle, Entrepreneur New York Magazine, Time Out New York, Marie Claire, Washingtonian, and a bunch of other companies. Aggie also started another company, which is in the marketing space and helps other fragrance and beauty cosmetic companies. It's called AB Creative and is a communications consultancy. Pretty cool. Aggie, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Thank you. Thank you for that amazing welcome. That was
well, awesome. You deserve it. You're doing.
I need to like bring you around everywhere with me.
You know, you're not the first person to say that. I actually have a package put together. I will send you the rate card for that. But just imagine on a date, you know, she's also a fantastic mother and a great lover. Welcome to Aggie, our date for the evening.
I love it.
It would be a great way to introduce. Yes. So every time you walk into the subway, I'll do that for the entire car. I'll introduce you to the taxi drivers that way. Everybody.
Send your rate card over. I'm down for that.
Awesome. I love this business. All right. Talk to me about the transition into entrepreneurship. What was your first baby step?
Okay, that's a good question. So my parents, when we first came to this country from Poland, I was 1 year old, and my parents had both, they were both doctors in Poland. And when we came to this country, they basically had to redo their doctorates and start all over again. So my first exposure to entrepreneurship was them building their own practices and really seeing hands-on, you know, how they built it from the ground up and making it very successful. And of course, like going through trials and tribulations as well along the way. And then for me, you know, my dream job had always been Glamour, to work, you know, in the beauty department, as a journalist at Glamour magazine. Like that was my end goal, was to be at that magazine. And actually, when I was working at the magazine, I got to interview a lot of different beauty entrepreneurs, beauty experts, scientists who created the cosmetics. And I got so intrigued and inspired by their work, their stories, that I realized like, okay, this may be something that I may want to pivot into. So that's what I did. I actually ended up you know, meeting with a bunch of them over coffee and just asking them questions like, tell me about what inspired you to start this business. How did you go about doing it? What kind of systems did you build? You know, like I was 22, 23 years old and just taking out these beauty entrepreneurs for coffee and lunch just so I can pick their brain.
I love it. I love it. And so then what was the first decision you made towards actually, you know, practical steps in this direction? You know, in other words, first money you spent.
That's a really great question. So first money I spent was ordering a number of different essential oils and fragrance ingredients to my little tiny 300 square foot apartment on the Upper West Side, and literally sitting on the counter, you know, by the counter, and just playing with different oils and combining them, and then creating a focus group with, you know, friends and family, and sending out little tiny vials of fragrances to like anyone that I knew. And, you know, once we sent it out, we actually found the contact name of the buyer on LinkedIn. And we did a bunch of digging to find the address. It ended up not being the right buyer, but she was so great. She ended up being like, this is a really cool product. This is really interesting and different. Let me, you know, send this over to the right buyer. And so that's when, you know, the right buyer, I think either we got in touch with them or they got in touch with us. And we ended up setting up a call with them, but we did have to do quite a little bit of like follow-up just to make sure to secure that call time. And that's something I would really recommend to all entrepreneurs. Like, follow-up is the name of the game. No matter who you're pitching, whether you're applying for a job or you're applying, you know, trying to pitch your product or your service, like follow-up. That's like so critical and so important.
It is, and it's so hard to do sometimes. It's such a unrewarding thing because you get voicemail half the time and all of that. And
exactly.
You're right. It takes a strong entrepreneur. So why did you decide to leave then? After that, you decided to go direct to consumer. Is it all about margins?
Yes and no. I think at the time, so, you know, we were so excited to get into Sephora and so excited to do the whole process as a dream retailer for us. We realized like during launch time and after launch that Sephora at the time, and I think it's much different now, they weren't really built up to support smaller brands, like very small up and coming brands. And so the infrastructure wasn't there. And so that was a big part of like, okay, like, is this making sense for us? Like, you have to spend quite a bit of money to be in a big box retailer as well. And I think that's what a lot of people don't realize. Like, they think that, okay, we're getting a PO and so for the product, and so we just need to pay the money to manufacture the product. But actually, most big box retailers, Target, you know, Sephora, they require you to do advertising, to do training in all of their retail stores. So that's a really huge investment.
Well, congratulations on that. And you've been able to step largely away from that business and run your consultancy 80-90% of the time, which means you have two income streams, right? That's the ultimate success.
Yes. I mean, there's so much more that there's so many more goals, but yes.
I love it. All right. I'm not a perfume person. I don't know if you guessed that or not, but how can we find out more about you? Buy stuff for our wives, girlfriends, sweeties, and daughters, and all that stuff. Find out more, follow you online, and maybe hire you to help us.
You can find out more information on abcreativenyc.com.
Well, fantastic. It's a great story, and I can't wait to see how it plays out. Thank you so much for being with us, and hope you'll come back. Maybe we'll come back and do the branding stuff here soon, okay?
Yeah, would love that. Thank you so much, Jim, for having me.
Well, we are out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. Have a great day, great weekend. Take care. Bye now.